Yaksharaksansi Bhutani Bhishacha Pishithasana Utesha Vatsaduduhu Kapalekshatajasavam.
This sounds like an exciting verse we are about to read.
Then the yakshas, rakshasas, ghosts and witches, who are habituated to eating flesh, transformed Lord Shiva's incarnation, Rudra, Bhutanan, into a calf and milked out beverages made of blood and put them in a pot of skulls.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
There are some types of living entities in the form of human beings whose living conditions and edibles are most abominable. Generally, they eat flesh and fermented blood, which is mentioned in this verse as kshatajasavam. The leaders of such degraded men, known as yakshas, rakshasas, bhutas, and pishachas, are all in the mode of ignorance. They have been placed under the control of Rudra. Rudra is the incarnation of Lord Shiva and is in charge of the mode of ignorance in material nature. Another name of Lord Shiva is Bhutanath, meaning master of ghosts. Rudra was born from between Brahma's eyes when Brahma was very angry at the four Kumaras.
We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 18, entitled Prithu Maharaj Milks the Earth Planet, text number 21.
Prithu Maharaj, being king, considered it his sacred responsibility to provide for the material, emotional, and spiritual needs of all of his subjects. By his example, he taught the world high principles of spirituality. By his kindness of treating each subject without discrimination as his own father, as father, treating them like his own children, he gave confidence and encouragement to those who are pious and fear to those who are impious. We find here that due to the sinful reign of the previous king, Vena, the earth was not providing foodstuffs for the sustenance of the citizens. Prithu Maharaj, with his great power as a Shaktyavesh avatar, threatened to punish the earth if she did not provide the necessities of all the inhabitants. Out of respect for Prithu Maharaj, the earth, who took the form of a cow, explained that whoever wants something from me by your mercy,
they will receive it.
Let them just come with a calf who will attract me to produce the milk of whatever form
nourishes them.
So different classes of people who are influenced by different modes of material nature have been approaching Mother Earth, and she has been supplying according to how they approach her,
whatever they so desire.
We have read in the previous verses that Prithu Maharaj had Swayambhuva Manu come as a calf, and she provided herbs and grains and foods in the mode of goodness to supply for the nourishment of the citizens. Indra took form of calf, and the demigods received nectar. And then Brihaspati, he came form of calf on behalf of the Brahmins and sages, and all kinds of Vedic knowledge, purified words, to purify words, mind, and hearing.
Diti transformed Prahlad into calf, and their desire was for the sons of Diti, the demons,
and they were given
liquor,
and so on and so forth. Here we find
the yakshas, rakshasas,
those deeply engrossed in the modes of ignorance. What is their
desire?
Mother Earth, who is appearing, as they say, as a cow of plenty, can produce anything material that anyone would want. Not only earthly gifts, but even heavenly gifts. Mother Earth has been given that power. As you approach the Lord, as you approach the Lord's energies, the Lord and His energies reciprocate accordingly. So here we find what they want, what they long for, is the flesh and the blood of other living beings. Can we turn on the exhausts and everything? The inconceivable nature of this world. One man's food is another man's poison. According to our particular mentality, we have particular ways we want to enjoy this world. We have particular wants as well as needs. It is all based on the conditionings of material nature. There are three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, ignorance. When the jivatma, the spirit soul, enters into this world, according to its desires, according to its activities and words, it further becomes entangled and conditioned by these modes of material nature. Imagine, every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. The Jivatma is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. The nature of the Jivatma is to love God, to serve God. The nature of the Jivatma is that it is godly, qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhood. But we come to this material world and remain in this material world as long as by our free, independent, God-giving will, we want to enjoy separate. Krishna is the proprietor and enjoyer of everything. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram. When we relinquish our nature to serve God, to give enjoyment to God, then we want to be the enjoyer. And the modes of material nature provide opportunities for all living beings to make their vain attempt of enjoying. The root cause of all suffering is we want to enjoy separate from Krishna. If you water the root of the tree, automatically you enjoy. If you try to enjoy separate from, if the tree tries to enjoy separate from putting water on root, it suffers. Krishna is the root of all existence. Janmadyasya yataha. But this illusory energy provides so much opportunity as well as propaganda to convince us that we can be happy if we enjoy. Three modes of material nature, or gunas, are compared to ropes. They keep one bound. This being bound up by ropes is very, very difficult to escape. In fact, Krishna says, unless one is armed with the sharp sword of transcendental knowledge, it is not possible to escape from these ropes of material nature. Now, our desires condition ourselves within and without, and we develop particular types of mentality. And that becomes our conception of reality. It's actually an extraordinarily fascinating subject to try to understand theoretically. How it is that two beings who are originally of the same substance, spiritual sparks, pure sparks of the Absolute Truth, God, can have such utterly contrary conceptions of reality. This world is constituted of unlimited variety of how to rebel against God. The spiritual world constitutes unlimited variety of how to love and serve God. So variegatedness is an eternal reality. This material existence is a perverted reflection of such variegatedness. Someone who is brought up in a pious Brahminical family in India. For them, the thought of eating meat, drinking the blood, extracted, rotted, fermented blood, and eating the flesh of an animal is abominable. It's incomprehensible. It's inconceivable. But for persons who are brought up in the Western world, who by their desires, activities, have conditioned themselves to such things, it's utterly inconceivable and impossible to comprehend how anyone can survive and be happy without drinking fermented blood and rotted flesh from other living beings. Actually, the meat that people eat in the so-called civilized world, it's all rotten. You can't eat it fresh. At least people don't like it that way. Some people living in the wilderness from hundreds of years ago, they may have done like that. But actually, what they do with these animals is after they kill them, the animals get rigor mortis. They become stiff. Their flesh becomes very tough. So they just hang them up until they actually start getting rotten. When they start getting rotten, then their flesh becomes soft. This is a fact. And their blood starts becoming a little fermented. At that point, people consider, now it is suitable for civilized human beings of the highest order to eat Hare Krishna. And so that it doesn't get more rotten, they have to keep it in refrigerators and freezers. And people don't eat it raw, obviously, because there's so many different types of bacteria and everything you have to kill by cooking it. People love this. In fact, when their children become vegetarians and eat fresh vegetables and fresh fruits and wholesome grains, the parents become very much alarmed. They think that their children will die because they're not being properly nourished. They think they must have joined some kind of crazy satanic cult, that they're not eating flesh and blood. Yes, it is true. People think you will be undernourished and die. Everyone eats these things. It's conditioning. And people are so conditioned to it. When Srila Prabhupada was in Butler, Pennsylvania, at the Agarwal's residence, he was astounded. He was born of a very, very strict, pious Vaishnav Gaudiya family, Gaur Mohan Day, and disciple of Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, lived in Vrindavan. So he was never really exposed much to the extent of a meat-eating culture. Although certainly the British tried to influence the Indians in such a way, but the higher class educated Indians would never do such things. But there was little baby, Bridge. Bridge was his name. Nice name. And he was watching what they were feeding the baby. The baby couldn't eat solid foods. They were feeding him liquefied, specially processed beef in little jars. The little baby's eating nice. Prabhupada understood what he was eating. He's astounded. To what extent parents feel their children need it for survival. And the father was an Indian from Mathura region. Haribo. Actually, that's how Prabhupada got to go to America. He writes in his diary that this Mr. Agarwal, he was living in Agra. He came to Mathura, met Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada came to his house. He was invited to his house in Agra, which is not a long distance by train from Mathura, Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was at his house for a day or so, visiting him, having katha, having kirtan. And Mr. Agarwal was very upset. He was telling the sorrow of his heart to Srila Prabhupada. He said, "My son, young man, so disturbed. Do you know what he did? He wanted to get an education. He wanted to study engineering. I couldn't stop him. How abominable. How pitiful. He went to America to study engineering." How many of your parents would be really brokenhearted to hear of such a tragedy? And then you know what happened? He was captured. He was entrapped by an American woman. Entrapped by an American woman. And I tried to save him, but I could not. He married her and settled in America. He was so disturbed by this. Srila Prabhupada was always thinking of an opportunity to serve as Guru Maharaj. He said, He has married an American woman. He's living in America. Why don't you ask him to sponsor me to go to America to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Mr. Agarwal didn't really reply, and Prabhupada didn't follow through with it. He just considered there was no response finished. Prabhupada forgot, even asked him that. 2 months later, when he was in Delhi, because he used to do his Back to Godheads, and he was also translating Srimad Bhagavatam and going to Delhi to get the books published, he got a notice that he had received a letter of invitation from Gopal Agarwal from America. So he took this as Krishna's arrangement. He actually got an invitation. The American consulate approved for him to come to America to give him a visa for 1 month. Only.
1 month visa. So then he started working in so many ways to take this opportunity. And ultimately, when he came to Butler, Pennsylvania, which is a small town, only a couple hours from New Vrindavan, actually. So if you ever come to New Vrindavan, you can easily go to Butler, Pennsylvania. Near Pittsburgh. And there he saw the American culture in the very house he was living in. How the parents were actually thinking, due to the conditioning of their surroundings, that they have to purchase little jars of pureed, that means very much ground up and made into like a liquid meat. Practically, instead of the milk from the mother, the child is getting ground up, liquefied meat. That's to the extent that people feel that it's the basic sustenance for survival. Protein. When my parents saw I was a vegetarian, they were so disturbed. You will die. You are not getting enough protein. My father went to his doctor and said, "What are we going to do about my son? He's going to die. He's not getting nourished. He's not eating meat." Now, the doctor happened, most doctors would agree with him. But this doctor happened to study medicine in various parts of the world. In fact, in the war, he was stationed in India for some time and in Japan. And he was studying, he was a doctor in the war too, World War II. So he told my father, "Actually, your son will probably outlive everyone because that's the best healthy diet there is." That was a severe culture shock. It's unheard of. And people are conditioned. They grow up in these countries just eating. It's like we have these golden arches here in Bombay, all over the place, and all over India now. People just eat. They don't know what they're eating. It's just fun food. They never really connect the origin, what goes into it. There was a study where they took little children who were eating their hamburgers and their hot dogs and all their other food. Small children, 10, 11 years old. And they took them on a tour of a slaughterhouse, where they saw the blood flowing, they saw fear in the animal's eyes, they heard the helpless crying of these animals, they saw them fall to the floor. Children were weeping and crying, they were terrified. And they were asked, "Do you know that this is what we do so that you can eat your fun food?" They were shocked. Couldn't understand. And actually, children, I don't know how much in India, but in the Western world, their best friends are animals. Children like to watch cartoons. Yes?
Most cartoons are about talking animals and flying animals. Yes? They love these animals. Birds and dogs, mice. They're all animals. And they're all doing so many nice things. And the children, most of their toys are little animals of their cartoon favorites. And if you get a child a pet, it's his best friend. Fights with his brothers, fights with his sisters, but loves his pet. Hit his brother, but if anyone touches his pet, he's willing to go to war with that person. Yes? I remember hearing once in a radio show where a person who was the spokesman for the anti-cruelty to animal society was talking about how that person saw a dog whose leash was too short and was feeling inconvenienced because the collar around its neck was chained with only a distance of about 2 feet. Actually had the owner of the dog put in jail for being cruel to the dog. Then it was time for phone calls and questions, and somebody asked, "What did you eat for lunch today?" Well, some meat product. So what hypocrisy? You're so much putting people in prison for making a little inconvenience to a dog, and you're supporting the slaughter of animals just so you can eat them? You're considering a dog as so much more elevated than a cow or a goat or a sheep or a chicken? Well, we like our cows and goats and chicks and fish. Why are you killing medieval? Somehow or other, just can't understand these things due to such severe, long-standing conditioning. And by the time you get some conception that there's murder and death involved, you're so conditioned to already doing it that you just rationalize, justify, and just can't really take it serious. Can't really understand or comprehend it. Those who are eating this kind of substance become more and more and more conditioned to the mode of ignorance. And we find here that the yakshas, the rakshasas, the ghosts, the witches, they're habituated to eating flesh. Prabhupada uses the word habituated. They can't give it up. They're addicted to it. The taste of blood. Actually, the taste of meat is blood. If the meat is really dry, even the dogs don't like it. But that blood is what gives it flavor. Hari Hari. So people so habituated to this drinking of blood of others that when these yakshas and so forth were given the opportunity to accept anything from Mother Earth, they could have taken nectar, they could have taken jewels, They could have taken any of the wealth that the earth can provide. And what do they want? Flesh and blood. And they chose to drink it out of a skull. Mode of ignorance. But there are people, there are societies. This is their standard. Just like the pirates. They used to have on their flag skull and crossbones. This was their emblem of the highest truth. Skull. What do you know? People are really attracted to these things. I have seen people who get models of skulls and even have dozens of them in their house, in every room. For them, it's a beautiful thing. It's artistic to see a skull. And if they see beautiful pictures of Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan Leela, what is that? Where are the skulls? This is the extent by which people become conditioned. The pure spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. Taking pleasure, getting life in that. Lord Shiva is herein called upon by the name of Bhutanath, Lord of Ghosts. And people who want to enjoy this type of pleasures, whether in the East or in the West, they worship this Bhutanath either directly or indirectly. In Mathura, not far from Vishram Ghat, we will find one of the main deities is Bhuteshwar Mahadev. This deity was the Ishtadev of Kamsa. Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Bhagavatam describes that Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of Krishna. He's Vaishnava. And Kamsa was the greatest enemy of Krishna. His passion was to kill Krishna by any means possible. He was sending demon after demon after demon to try to kill Krishna. How is this possible? Why does he worship the greatest devotee of Krishna to kill Krishna? Because the Lord is so merciful. The Lord is so accommodating that according to your desires, he appears in different ways. Srila Prabhupada explained, in Calcutta, there is Kali Ghat. Have any of you ever been there? Anyone? I do not recommend, because the type of prasad that they serve out is not appropriate for a Vaishnav. But they're slaughtering animals, pouring the blood over the tongue of the deity, and then using that as tilak. So Srila Prabhupada explained that these people are thinking that they're eating Kali's prasad. But they're not, because Kali is the consort of Shiva. Shiva's the greatest of all Vaishnavas. Kali is an expansion of Parvati. Parvati's an expansion of Srimati Radharani, the goddess of fortune. Just as Shiva is an expansion of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. Parvati would never, ever, ever eat anything except the remnants of her husband, Shankar Bhagavan. Lord Shiva is a pure vegetarian who only eats Krishna's prasad. He's the greatest Vaishnav. How could he take anything else? Would we be worshipping him as the greatest Vaishnav if he wasn't taking prasad? So Kali doesn't eat what they offer. She can't. But there's so many bhutas, ghosts, spirits, witches. Pishacha. The bhutas and the pishachas. There. She just says, this person's offering to me. I can't eat it. You eat it. So they glance on it. And then what you're getting is not Kali Prasad. It is Pishacha Prasad. And Bhuta Prasad. And Rakshasa Prasad. And Yaksha Prasad. Not Kali. But the Lord is so merciful. Toward the beginning of creation, by Krishna's sweet will, the Lord appears in various forms to accommodate various people's mentalities. So four Kumaras, beautiful children. Lord Brahma had a service to Krishna to procreate life through so many species within the universe he was living. That was his service. So you know the tradition in India is the sons help the fathers in their occupational duties. So he was expecting the Kumaras to help. So he was arranging them to get married. And Kumaras, they saw what's happening in this. They were intelligent people. Very pure-hearted. So much entanglement. So much bondage. All this effort. We will remain brahmacharis. Now, for those of you who are brahmacharis in this class today, you may have some degree of experience how your parents did not approve. They may have even become angry upon you. Is that what happens? Yes. Well, we will tell you the original episode of angry parents toward brahmacharis. Lord Brahma, at the beginning of creation, he couldn't tolerate the fact that the Kumaras were not going to take nice wives and live nice life and procreate so that he could have nice grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren and great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. The Kumaras didn't think it was very great at all. They decided just celibacy, brahmacharya. I'm not going to get entangled on all this. These passionate relationships are so much bondage. So Brahma became angry at them. Actually, he was not angry because they didn't want to get married only. He was angry because they weren't helping him in his mission, and getting married was part of that mission. By the will of the Lord. From his anger, from between his eyebrows,
Rudra was born. Bhutanath.
He had red complexion due to that anger of Brahma. Now Sadashiva
is very, very pure, always meditating on the divine lila of Sri Krishna.
But his expansion of Rudra, he's destroyer. Although he's a great devotee in heart, he's playing the role of actually being the lord of the ghosts, pisachas, and all sorts of yakshas and rakshasas.
And they worship him for their demoniac purposes.
And although he personally does not partake in any of their nefarious desires, as Rudra, as a demigod with that particular service, he actually rewards them. Mode of ignorance. He's the lord of the mode of ignorance, Bhutanath. However, Vaishnavas worship that same Bhutanath as the greatest of all Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, they worshipped Shiva in so many temples, begging for love of Krishna. We read in Bhagavatam of Vrikasura, he was worshipping Shiva, cutting off his own flesh, and putting it in the sacred fire, chanting Shiva's names. This was his puja. Demanding, not humbly requesting, demanding Shiva to appear. And Shiva, why would he want to appear to somebody like that? He didn't. Shambhu Bhagavan! Still he didn't appear. He just was cutting meat right off his body. Blood was flowing and he was just putting in the fire, just crying out, Shankar! After so many attempts, he was so determined. Determination is very important. Vyavashayatmaka Bhutir, Ekeha Kudanandanar. His aim was one, but for the wrong purpose. He actually came to the conclusion and decision he was going to cut off his own head and offer it to Shiva. So he just took the sacrificial sword and was just about to cut off his head as he was crying with demanding Lord Shambhu to appear. So Rudra appeared. He said, all right, enough, enough. You don't have to cut off your head. What do you want? Grant me that benediction. Anybody whose head I touch will crack into 1,000 pieces and they will die. So be it. Now, do you think he was a loving devotee of Lord Shiva? This story is very instructive. He was just doing business with Shiva. And you know the way business is. For the sake of your success, sometimes ethics and morals is put aside. So Lord Shiva, who's his worshipable Lord, who he's doing all these yajnas for, who he's willing to chop off his flesh and his blood and his very head to satisfy, when he saw Parvati, who's the embodiment of beauty, He wanted to enjoy her. But there was a problem. How could he enjoy her as long as Shiva is living? So he went to touch Shiva's head. And Shiva already gave him the benediction. Anybody whose head he touched, crack into 1,000 places. So Shiva was running and he was running and Shiva was running and he was running. This is a very instructive pastime. Then Lord Vishnu appears as a small boy. What are you doing? He told him, you will be embarrassed. You will touch Shiva's head. Shiva's benedictions don't always work. Better you test it. Huh? Test it? How do I test it? Just touch your head. How do you roll? So this is mentality. Srila Prabhupada explains there was a very, very famous worshipper of Kali. He has temples all over the world. And millions of people honor him as God. So this person, he was a devotee of Kali, pujari for Kali. And his guru taught him that you just meditate so intensely on Kali and she'll come and offer you all benedictions, but you just meditate, just your gaze of your intense determined meditation upon her form until by the power of your determination, you obliterate her form. Then you attain the ultimate perfection of liberation, mukti. When by your intense meditation, you destroy the form of your Ishtadev, then you go beyond form. Into the formless existence of the Supreme Brahman. So this type of worship is not pleasing to Kali. She doesn't want her form obliterated. Her form is there to serve her eternal consort. Similarly, a devotee, Kaivalya Narakayate, they do not want impersonal liberation because they understand that we have a spiritual form that is meant for the service of our beloved Lord. Cannot tolerate the idea of being without a form to serve. Being without a form means being without service, being without exchange of love. It's worse than hell for a devotee. So Kamsa was worshipping Bhuteshwar Mahadev to get the benediction of having the strength, the power, and the wisdom to kill Krishna. But Lord Shiva had no power to give such benediction, nor did he have any desire to give such benediction. Banasura, he was such a devotee of Shiva. Shiva granted him 1,000 arms, and he used to play drums, and Shiva would dance. He was a good drummer. And he asked for the benediction to defeat Krishna. There you go. And Shiva was so obliged, this Rudra, Bhutanath, he was so obliged to Banasura that when Krishna was that when Krishna was defeating Banasura, Shiva came with all his armies to fight against Krishna. Haribol. And then Krishna defeated him with his
Narayanadvara. And Lord Shiva surrendered. And Krishna told him that there is no one that I hate more than you. You have taken the sides of this demon and attacked me. Now that, those words, were the ultimate defeat of Lord Shiva. Because whatever Lord Shiva is doing in this world is for the pleasure of Krishna.
He said, "My Lord, it was by your yogamaya potency that I fought you. It wasn't my desire. It was your will. It was your desire. I was just doing what you wanted me to do. I fought you only for one purpose, so that you would defeat me, so that everybody would know that you are supreme. Because people think I'm the supreme. So I had to fight you and I had to be defeated just to show the world that I'm not supreme. You are supreme. Harivo." Vaishnavanam yata Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigena bujai. It's very difficult to understand the heart of a Vaishnava. He fought against Krishna to glorify Krishna. He wanted everybody to know that he is subordinate to Krishna. And Krishna was so pleased with him. "What benediction do you like?" Shiva said, "In my service to you, I have such bad association. All these bhutas and pishachas and everybody else are coming and worshipping me and they're coming to my deity form and they're giving all these abominable substances. I just want to be with you. Please give me the chance to associate with you. Due to this association and by your yogamaya potency, I'm even fighting against you. Give me a place where I can always have your association." So the Lord gave him a benediction. By the sea is Niladri, a beautiful blue mountain. On that mountain I will always exist as Lord Jagannath, along with my brother Balaram and sister Subhadra. I will grant you a place to guard my abode and always be close by to me. Your name will be Bhuvaneshwar. And the whole city will be named after you. And therefore you will reside. So Lord Shiva took his residence in Bhuvaneshwar, where he's always having the close association of Lord Jagannath. Lord Shiva is famous for dancing for the pleasure of Krishna. But in reciprocation to his love, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was Krishna himself, came to Bhuvaneshwar and danced in ecstasy for the pleasure of Lord Shiva. This is the reciprocation of the love between them. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the story of Bhrigu Muni. He was asked by the sages to test the Trimurtis, Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar, to see which is supreme. So he went to his father Brahma, and he didn't offer proper respects to his father. So his father became angry. So he was disqualified. Then he went to his brother, His elder brother, Lord Shankar. And oh, Lord Shiva was so happy to see his brother Bhrigu, who came to embrace him. Oh, my brother, don't touch me, you filthy, ignorant person. Skulls and ashes. Don't comb your hair. You don't bathe properly. You associate with ghosts. Don't touch me and contaminate me. Shiva became angry. Disqualified. Then when he went to meet Vishnu, he ran up and kicked Vishnu right in the chest. And Vishnu very lovingly sat him down and massaged his feet. He said, my chest is so hard and your lotus feet are so soft. I hope that you didn't hurt yourself. Please excuse my offenses. Is there any way I can serve you? So Vishnu was proclaimed to be supreme. Now Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the knower of everything, he reveals the inner secret of this story. Actually, Brahma and Shiva were not angry at Bhrigu Muni. They're great souls. They pretended to be angry. They actually assumed the form of anger to the point where Shiva was willing to attack him with his trident before Parvati stopped him. He's your brother. He's your little brother. But they behaved in that way because they wanted it absolutely 100% unconditionally clear that Vishnu is the supreme. That he is the origin of everything, he is the cause of all causes, and that they are all his subordinate servants. That was their loving devotion. A devotee does not care for his or her own glorification. They want to see Krishna glorified. Many stories of this nature. So Kamsa worshipped Bhuteshwar Mahadev. And what was the benediction that Bhuteshwar Mahadev actually gave Kamsa? He didn't tell Kamsa this. But because Kamsa was doing all this kind of puja to Lord Shiva for the power and the strength to kill Krishna, he thought that he would be undefeatable because he has Bhuteshwar Mahadev's blessings. He had his blessings. The blessing was to be killed by Krishna. Get killed by Krishna, you get liberation. That was his actual blessing. So people in this world are so much deeply immersed in their greed and their pride and their lust. They're so much entangled by the modes of nature. They want to kill God. They think they'll pay large sums of money to enjoy banquets, which consist primarily of rotted flesh and blood of innocent murdered animals. And as long as you're killing animals, humans are a type of animal too. Two-legged animals. There are rakshasas and even tribes of people today that eat humans. In fact, once you become addicted to human flesh,
very difficult to overcome.
And it is a fact that people today pay large amounts of money. Only the very, very wealthy, aristocratic people of society can afford such a delicacy. The meat of fetuses or newborn infants that die, human, very tender, very delicious to their palates.
Hari Hari,
they're like little Kumbhakarnas. Kumbhakarna would just grab handfuls of human, just see people and just grab handfuls of them and just eat them. I'm sorry about that. Yes. That was his sense gratification. So how powerful are these modes of material nature? How they degrade and bewilder the intelligence of a pure spirit soul. Unbelievable. Daivi heshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya mame vame prapadyante maya meta tarantite. Krishna tells these modes of material nature are very, very difficult to overcome. And once you come under the influence of particular modes, that mode is very difficult to overcome. Alcoholics, how difficult it is for them to get out of their addiction to alcohol. Drug addicts, how difficult it is to get out of that. Cigarettes, there's so much in the mode of ignorance. Smoke, just finding sense gratification in eating smoke from a carcinogenic diseased plant. How do you go? And they think it tastes good. Srila Prabhupada saw that advertisement. There's a particular cigarette called Cool. And there's a beautiful man and a handsome man and beautiful woman under a waterfall smoking these cigarettes. And it says, refreshingly cool, smoke cool. And Prabhupada said, these people are so brainwashed. They're thinking by sucking in fire, it's going to be cool. And they actually put different menthol ingredients in it, so people are actually thinking it's very cool. Such conditioning, to give that up is very difficult. There's so many anonymouses. I don't even know how many anonymous. There's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's Drugs Anonymous, there's Sex Anonymous, there's Gambling Anonymous, there's practically everything in the world there's an anonymous for. People become so addicted to things in the mode of passion and ignorance. There's Anger Anonymous. I know some people who go to Anger Anonymous. Because they just get angry and they just can't, they just crush people's heads and they scream at people and they beat their wives and they hit their children and they just can't control their anger. They need help. They're addicted. They're slaves. They're bound up by these ropes of material nature. Ignorance and passion. Very difficult to overcome. But Krishna tells, one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to this world to teach us a lifestyle by which we can surrender to Krishna
in a practical way in our daily lives. Because Krishna has descended in this age of Kali as his holy name.
Srila Prabhupada, out of his mercy, his kindness, he saw how people all over the world are being influenced by these yakshas and rakshasas and bhutas and pishachas, habituated to drugs and meat, habituated to ego and lust and anger. Trivadam narakasyetam dwaram nashitam atmana. Lust, anger, greed. They are the three gates leading to hell. People are addicted to these things. How to save them?
Srila Prabhupada started serving out prasad and teaching people to chant the holy names. And it actually became easy for people to give up drugs, give up illicit sex. That one's not always that easy. But they easily gave up eating meat and blood. Once they tasted Prabhupada's gulab jamuns. And then when they tasted Prabhupada cooking with ghee, the essence of the cow's blood is in ghee. And the cow gives it out of her motherly love. You don't have to kill her to get her other blood. That is civilization. Prabhupada said, just open up restaurants, serve out nice prasad cooked in ghee, and they will not want to eat meat. And it's true. Factually, there are tens and millions of people in the Western world now who are turning to vegetarianism. And a very major influence is Prabhupada's distribution of prasad. Otherwise, people don't know. People were willing to easily give up these demoniac, ignorant, passionate vices just by taking prasad, associating with devotees, and surrendering to Krishna by chanting his holy name. For the pleasure of Krishna Nanda Prabhu, let us chant very loudly once again. Is there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There are basically two questions related to each other. One is, I have seen certain people who are so conditioned to eating non-vegetarian foodstuffs that even if you offer them prasad, they don't like it actually. They don't like the taste, but as a formality they may take a very small... I know one such person and he says that he doesn't like vegetarian foods. He's so addicted to non-vegetarian. Every day he has to eat non-vegetarian foodstuffs. And secondly, by wide distribution of prasad, if you are converting masses of people into vegetarianism, then there is a common thread which is even felt by devotees, that those slaughterhouses who are supporting the government may become against the movement and they may create some problems within society. So these two problems, how one should tackle? One is... These two problems, how one should handle, how a devotee should look towards these two problems. One is that encouraging even such a person to have prasad who doesn't have any taste for vegetarian foodstuff. And secondly, this political issue.
We are not concerned with politics, we are concerned with truth. We should do everything within our power to convince people to give up sinful activities, which is creating individual and massive collective karmic disasters, and surrender to the will of Krishna. That is our only purpose in life, is to live in such a way that we can help people to actually live in harmony with the will of Krishna and be happy. We are not concerned with all of these other Is there any other questions? Yes?
We have talked about different type of addictions in this class today, but another major type of addiction that even infects the many of the devotees is the addiction of watching television. You know, even after getting this higher taste of chanting and dancing, devotees, many initiated, Brahman initiated devotees are yet not able to give up the addiction of television. So it will be worth knowing from you, Maharaj, how really to tackle this major problem, which appears to be very innocent, but it is really plaguing so many of us.
It is a waste of time. Of course, if there is actually some proper educational shows on the television, usually people justify that's why they have their televisions. However, the Paramatma is in your heart and he's watching your show. So, we should be realistic and honest. Most of the television stations they're existing to make money. They're not existing to enlighten you. They're existing to exploit you. And the question is, do we want to subject our consciousness and the consciousness of our families to be so expertly and meticulously exploited? Because that's what's happening. And much of what is on the televisions are activities in the mode of passion and ignorance. Sex and violence. People in the modes of passion and ignorance, they find entertainment in sex and violence, in gambling and greed. So therefore, that's what people put. And we become very, very severely affected by that, by associating with that. That is a fact. It is said that to destroy the Indian culture, the Vedic culture, or what people call the Hindu culture, very difficult.
What the Mughals could not do in 700 years. What the British could not do in 200 years. Television has done in about 20 years. Actually destroy the fiber of the culture of a society. It's the power of Maya. It may seem very innocent. I don't remember the exact statistics, but something like this. By the time a child is about 10 years old, American television, and now American television is satellite, it's everywhere in the world, British television, European television, Swedish television, it's all about the same. By the time a child is about 10 or 11 years old, they have already seen tens and thousands of murders, of scenes of passionate sex, anything that goes in influences your heart, especially if you're attentively receptive to it. If you're walking down the street and things are going on in the modes of passion and ignorance, you're affected by it, but you're not. But if you don't put your attention on it, you're not affected so deeply. But when you're sitting and you're in rapt attention, and these influences of passion and ignorance are before you, they're going deep into your heart. They're conditioning you. We're trying to give up our materialistic ways, and then we're just filling our consciousness with these materialistic impressions. We chant our japa, we come to the Sunday program, it's like taking a bath and turning on the television is like the elephant just rolling in the dirt again. Unless you're actually honestly watching educational programs, because they are there too. Some historical or educational. But the temptation is there because you have that channel changer. This is educational, but let me see what's there. This is very nice, very nice, very attractive. How does Maya capture you? By attracting you. These yakshas and rakshasas are attracted to blood and flesh. People are attracted to sex life. People are attracted to intoxication. People are attracted to greed and anger. And who are the heroes of today? People who are promoting sex, intoxications. What you associate with, you become. Cannot avoid it. What you associate with, you take on those qualities. Put the iron rod in fire, it becomes hot. Put the iron rod of your consciousness in the television, and whatever they're showing on the television just pours right into your heart, and all the motives and all the subtleties involved. So the devotee simply has to be serious and ask, what do I want in life? And accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. That's the simple formula of Srila Rupa Goswami. But what is Maya's business? To convince you to accept what's unfavorable for devotional service. And Maya is the best marketer in the whole marketplace. She knows how to package her product in such a way that will just enamor your heart. Yes? But a devotee who has understood Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada was appealing with us, pleading with us to understand the dangers of material nature. Don't be befooled by her packaging. Just like Putana. Putana appeared as the most beautiful goddess of fortune. Description of her body is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. She was so attractive. She appeared to be such a friend. She appeared to be like the mother of the universe. But within her was the poison to kill Krishna. So similarly, Maya, she appears. Pishacha. Putana was Pishacha. She was a special type of Pishacha. Ketri Pishacha. So Maya, she appears in such a way to attract us. But when we accept her, when we try to take nourishment from her, there is the poison. The poison that kills our propensity for Krishna consciousness. So we must understand what is what. Acharyopashanam, one who has acharya, hears from acharya, knows what is what. Otherwise we don't know. Maya appears as our mother. Maya appears as our friend. Maya appears as our well-wisher. We must understand who is Maya, and what is she really delivering us? Along with the sweet milk is poison. So the technology of these various forms of entertainment today are very often incredibly attractive. But the producers and the directors and the actors, they are all puppets in the hands of Maya. They have surrendered to Maya to allure more and more and more and more people. Now they have these mind-boggling, attractive special effects where somebody chops off the head and whoop, another head just comes right up. That's like Ravana. What evil? So many things. Now if they're showing Mahabharata in its pure state, or Ramayana in its pure state, where they're actually trying to educate people in a nice way, pious way, then it's not harmful. But these forms of entertainment that are simply commercialized to plunder and exploit you through violence and anger, according to statistics, I will end here. When a third world country, when television is introduced and facilitated within that country, within 2 years, the crime rate increases by about 10 times. People are influenced. There was a movie in America about somebody who was cutting people off, cutting people's bodies apart with chainsaw, electrical saw. And after the movie, madmen started killing people with electrical saws. People become insane by the influence of such violence, affected deeply. So if we take as very sacred the real purpose and goal of our life, we should do what's favorable for achieving it. Isn't it already in our lives so hard to overcome the modes of passion and ignorance? Are we not struggling to overcome them, to become pure? Then why? Why associate, influence, and give such immense strength to the modes of passion and ignorance within our own consciousness? It just makes it all that much more excruciatingly difficult to be Krishna conscious. So the choice is yours. Krishna is watching you. Paramatma has your station tuned in 24 hours a day. Arivo. So let us come before Radha Gopinath and let him enjoy watching us, relishing his Srimad Bhagavatam, dancing in ecstasy and chanting his holy name. The Society of Devotees is the cast. And we need producers and directors, everybody, to put on a wonderful performance for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. That is our life and soul. And that is where our real happiness and liberation and ultimate love will be found. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you. Does that answer your question? Thank you very much.